Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Carrie Goldberg, filling in for Meghna Chakrabarty. Hundreds of people convicted of drug offenses using evidence handled by disgraced former chemist Annie Dukan have been released from prison. And now one of those men has been accused of murder. It's just the latest fallout from the scandal at the now-shuttered state drug lab in Jamaica Plain.
Annie Dukan allegedly falsified drug tests and tampered with drug evidence, compromising the integrity of tens of thousands of criminal cases. State authorities are sifting through massive amounts of data related to drug tests at the JP lab, more than 2 million pieces of information. National forensic experts, such as Dr. Lawrence Koblinski at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York, describe it this way.
The drug testing problem in Massachusetts is far and away the most serious problem that we have ever become aware of in this country.
WBUR has launched a multimedia journalism project called Bad Chemistry to analyze this data in unique ways and reveal just how vast and complex the story is.
Joining us to talk about the project and recent developments in the Annie Dukan story is WBUR's Deborah Becker. Deb, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
So whenever I think about this Annie Dukan story, I get this image in my head of something like a bomb going off in the Massachusetts court system and legal papers fluttering and floating in the air, a couple of million of them, and just such a mess. But what are the trends that the Bad Chemistry Project found in analyzing the database of tests linked to Annie Dukan?
One of the things that we found was the time that it took Dukan to turn around drug tests. That was much faster than any other chemist who worked at the Hinton Drug Lab in Jamaica Plain. Our analysis also found that the pace of her testing accelerated even when it should have declined. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason it should have declined was because of what's known as Melendez-Diaz, and that's the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in 2009 that required chemists to appear in court to testify about their results.
So how could Dukan have been able to do the test so quickly? What do investigators believe that she was doing?
Well, investigators allege that Dukan was doing what's known as dry labbing, and that's essentially looking at a substance and certifying it as illegal without doing the necessary chemical testing. State police interviews with Dukan suggest that she admitted to dry labbing, and what they say she told them was that she did it for, quote, a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. So, Deb, we've been told that the database of drug tests that WBUR and the state are working with is not quite complete, actually. Tell us about that.
Well, the database is, at best, rough, I would say. Mm-hmm. It lists thousands of drug tests that are believed to be linked to Dukan. But often, this list has no accompanying court information, such as a docket number. And in some instances, there's no name attached to the test. Wow. So we spoke with defense lawyer Tom Workman. He's also been analyzing this database, and this is the way he described it.
I cannot figure out how to find whether my clients had their samples processed by Annie Dukan. And I have the database. The names are not entered accurately. Some of the names say things like CI, which stands for confidential informant. There are other cases that say fat man. Well, maybe the defendant was a fat man, but I can't match that up in my database to one of my clients.
So, Carrie, obviously it's been difficult for attorneys and others to try to match up some of the alleged bad testing with actual criminal cases.
Yeah, it sounds like the records are unbelievably bad. So you've been following the twists and turns of the Annie Dukan story closely. What's the latest?
Well, there have been several developments, but I'd like to start by saying one of the reasons we decided to do this project is because this is such a complex developing story that affects several areas. First, there's the criminal case against Annie Dukan, who's charged with falsifying drug tests and obstruction of justice. There's the fallout in the criminal justice system as it tries to figure out which cases were involved and which cases are in question. Now, initial estimates, Carrie, were that 34,000 cases were affected by this, but now folks are saying that that number will probably rise and as many as 190,000 criminal cases could be affected.
Wow.
Then we've got special court sessions hearing the cases potentially affected. About 800 cases have been heard so far. Then there are the issues related to potential racially tainted convictions. People lost their jobs. People lost custody of their children. People risked deportation. And at last check, 286 people were released from incarceration. Then, as you mentioned, we found out Friday that one of those people released from jail is now charged with murder. Donta Hood was arrested in 2009 on drug charges. He served 3 years in jail, but he was released last fall because Annie Ducon tested the drug evidence in his case. She also testified during his trial. He's now charged with fatally shooting Charles Evans in Brockton last Tuesday. So we have all of these things happening, and then there are questions about Ducon's communication with prosecutors. The evidence against her includes hundreds of emails with prosecutors which show that she knew specifics about particular cases for which she was doing the testing. They show that she and prosecutors were making comments such as, keep those defendants behind bars. And critics say those emails cross a line and that chemists should be unbiased scientists and do not need to have knowledge about, or specific knowledge about, all the details of cases.
So the suggestion is that she was purposely trying to put people behind bars.
Well, I think the suggestion was that many times she was working at the behest of the prosecution and the behest of the state. And so there are many folks who question whether there needs to be a stronger, clearer line between the chemist and the prosecutorial team.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. So, Deb, as we mentioned, Bad Chemistry is an ongoing project to keep track of the drug lab story.
That's right. It's an on-air, online collaboration where we'll provide comprehensive information about this story, and we'll continue to post information. The site is badchemistry.wbur.org. We have video interviews with some of those most directly affected. We have some of those email exchanges with prosecutors that we talked about, and all the stories that we've done to date, all the legal documents in the case, and the analysis of the database.
And I would say, actually, I found the timeline especially helpful. It really sort of clarifies the major points in the story. Well, WBUR reporter Deb Becker, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And we always appreciate hearing from you. You can post your comments on anything you hear at radioboston.org. That's our program for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Carrie Goldberg. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.